Welcome to Slacker Astronomy, a podcast about astronomy and just about anything else that floats over our heads.
Each week, we bring you a recent news event from the world of astronomy. And when there's nothing new to report, we'll work on our community service time to pay off our FCC fines.
This would be a good time to remind our audience of our rating system. Remember that last summer we began labeling our shows in the MP3 tags and the XML feed with one of three codes.
FF stands for family friendly, which means it's completely clean for everyone. OF stands for office friendly, which means there could be some innuendo or adult humor, but nothing strong. JF stands for just for fun, which means that anything goes.
Definitely listen to a JF show before playing it in a public forum.
And the casual listener will eventually learn to judge the moods of our authors, Pamela and Aaron, based on the show ratings. Everyone play along and help judge just when these two may need Prozac and a padded room or two.
And now changing subjects. Trivia question for you, Travis. What do Earth-crossing asteroids, supernovae, alien invasions, and reality television all have in common?
They all pretend the end of intelligent life on Earth?
That's right. And notice something missing from the list?
The Backstreet Boys?
No. How about gamma ray bursts?
Oh, well, that was my second choice, but they are just as frightening.
Well, now you can scratch it off entirely. Gamma ray bursts, or GRBs for short, are unlikely to ever cause a mass extinction event on Earth.
Whew. Well, now that that's taken care of, I can sleep easy tonight. As long as the Backstreet Boys don't reunite, that is.
Well, this is a serious topic. Mass extinction stories mean big business. Just check out the Discovery Channel or the National Geographic Channel in the evening. You'll find plenty of shows about comets crashing into an Earth, fully illustrated with computer-generated reenactments, just slightly higher in quality than the Godzilla movies.
You mean comets and meteors in plastic suits lay waste to Tokyo and New York?
If only they were so entertaining. But these shows strike a chord in our society, or else people wouldn't watch, and astronomers wouldn't issue important press releases every time they discover a comet with a 1 in a million chance of striking the Earth sometime in the next 1,000 years.
One reason they strike that chord could be because we know that this has happened in our past, and not once, but many times.
Since life evolved to the point of being able to leave fossils behind about 540 million years ago, there's a strong geological evidence for many mass extinction events. The exact number depends on how massive an extinction event would need to be to qualify.
Lightweight extinction events occur about every 25 to 50 million years, and some scientists say we are in the midst of one today.
The sumo wrestler class of events occur much less often. It is widely accepted that there have been about 5 such sumo-level extinction events. The most recent took out the dinosaurs.
It is not known exactly what causes these events. Comet and asteroid impacts from space are one of the more popular theories, and scientists even think they have found the leftover crater from the dinosaur impact buried deep in the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico.
The crater is buried an entire kilometer below the Earth's surface. It is 180 kilometers wide and 900 meters deep, and it can't be seen from the surface of the Earth. It can only be seen by satellite.
We placed a photo in the album art of this episode and in the show notes of our website at slackerastronomy.org.
Recently, another possible explanation for some of these extinction events has gained traction in the press and the scientific journals. This theory blames gamma ray bursts, or as all the cool astronomers call them, GRBs.
GRBs are a recently discovered phenomenon, or rather a recently discovered pair of phenomena, since GRBs come in 2 varieties.
One type of GRB, the short GRB, is possibly caused by the merger of some combination of neutron stars and stellar mass black holes. These bursts last less than 2 seconds.
The other type of GRB, the long GRB, is triggered when a supermassive star collapses and explodes like a supernova. When these stars die, they don't leave behind plain Jane neutron stars like the normal supernovae explosions. They leave behind black holes. Long GRBs emit gamma rays for as many as 2,000 seconds.
During the explosion, the material that once formed the outer layers of the star gets ejected as energy along the 2 poles of the once massive star's magnetic field. If we happen to be looking down the pole of the star, we see this energy as a gamma ray burst.
Both short and long gamma ray bursts are accompanied by ultraviolet, optical, infrared, and even radio light. We've talked about chasing these afterglows in several past episodes, which we have linked in our show notes.
If an Earth-like planet was within a few thousand light years of such a beam, then the Earth's atmosphere would be ruined. First, the ozone would be wiped out. Then the atmosphere would be turned into a methane-rich brown smog. Needless to say, all but the simplest of life forms would die out. Even ocean life would be affected, although life on the mid-ocean vents might have some small shot at survival.
Previous estimates of GRB activity predicted that one would occur within a galaxy every few hundred million years, about the same rate as the extinction events.
However, some very prominent and respected gamma-ray burst experts believe they have ruled out GRBs as the source of past mass extinction events. So we can all breathe a sigh of relief, except their evidence isn't exactly overwhelming.
The primary author of the paper is Christoph Stanek of The Ohio State University. He is considered a leading GRB expert. He and his team looked at four recent GRBs that occurred relatively close to our galaxy.
They looked for similarities in the properties of the four host galaxies that gave birth to the GRBs. They found a striking similarity. All four galaxies had low metal counts.
So, not everyone can win. They should just train harder.
Not metals, metals. In astronomy, anything other than hydrogen and helium is considered a metal.
Well, that's not much of a contest, then.
Metals are not won in contests. They are formed in stars and then recycled as the stars die and new ones are born. Stars and galaxies that are far away emitted their light a long time ago, and thanks to the finite speed of light, we see them as they appeared far in the past.
So, when the universe was young, there were fewer metals because the stars just hadn't gotten around to making them yet. And the distant galaxies we see making GRBs are missing the metals seen in modern galaxies.
Exactly. The light from stars in closer galaxies, the modern galaxies, has taken less time to reach us, so the stars are from a new generation, born of the ashes of older stars. From their metal-poor grand stars' deaths, they inherited the metals that make up you, me, and, well, them.
Ah, to be young and born into wealth. I wonder what it feels like.
Well, it makes you safer, for one thing, since GRBs seem to only occur in metal-poor galaxies. So if you have a lot of metal, it's unlikely that GRBs can occur in your galaxy, and you're safe from one of the many nasty cataclysmic events in the universe.
Here is where the paranoid insomniacs will rejoice. Our galaxy, that is the Milky Way, probably has far too many metals in it to support the formation of gamma-ray bursts. Our own sun is probably a member of the third generation of stars and has inherited lots of metals from its elders. In fact, it only takes 10% of the metal content of our sun to preclude GRB activity, according to this paper.
The protoplanetary system that gave birth to the solar system had enough metals to form the planets that orbit the sun. So Stanek's paper predicts that stars that have enough metals to form planets are far too metal-heavy to allow GRBs.
Thus, not only are we safe on Earth, but all life in the universe is safe from these nasty GRBs. We'll have to thank the Flying Spaghetti Monster for creating such a safeguard in the universe.
How does one thank the FSM?
Why, leaving a plate of Parmesan cheese in front of the shrine, of course.
Of course.
The only glaring weakness of the argument is that it's based on a sample size of four. And while in the physicsweb.org article they claim GRBs occur reasonably nearby only once a year, the fact is, we aren't watching the entire sky all of the time, and they could occur much more often.
So this theory needs to be tested by discovering many more close GRBs and studying the metal content of their home galaxies. The problem is, the nearby GRBs tend to be weaker than the typical, more distant GRBs and are harder to detect.
They are probably weaker because of the presence of at least some small, weak amounts of metals in their formation. These close galaxies aren't completely metal-free, they are just low in metals. Sort of like the low-fat potato chips still have fat. Galaxies dating from the formation of the universe, however, can be virtually metal-free, just like those terrible WoW potato chips are virtually fat-free.
And while fat-free chips lead to less butt formation, metal-free galaxies lead to more GRB formation.
This paper was posted on a preprint server and submitted to a major astronomical journal. However, it hasn't been accepted or passed peer review yet. We'll keep an eye on it and keep you updated via our chit-chat shows on the SA Extra feed if anything should come out of this paper during the review process.
Let's finish by putting some things in perspective. About 70% of professional biologists feel that the Earth is at the beginning of the sixth mass extinction event in history.
This event is called the Holocene extinction, and the cause is believed to be mainly climate change brought on by natural cycles or mankind, or possibly natural cycles magnified by mankind through industrial global warming and destruction of both rainforests and undersea habitats.
So don't worry about GRBs in space. The real threat is here and now. Let's see if the Discovery Channel has the guts to reenact the real threat.
Well, how do you reenact apathy?
Easy. Just show families camped out in front of the TV.
Well, we'd like to thank you all for camping out with our little show. That's it for this edition of Slacker Astronomy. Thanks for listening. And remember, show notes are at slackerastronomy.org.
Clear skies and clear bandwidth. This is Pamela signing off on behalf of Travis and our author, Aaron.
This has been Slacker Astronomy, a podcast for fun, for you, for the voices in our heads.
Hey, Travis, aren't you supposed to start editing the show now so we can air it without people hearing Aaron's directorial rants in the background?
Yeah, just give me a second here. I'm searching for some stuff.
Stuff like giant teddy bears and pink flamingo lawn ornaments?
Pink flamingo lawn ornaments? Why would I? I don't even have a lawn. No, stuff like eyepieces and solar filters. You know, the cool astronomy stuff they have at Oceanside Photo and Telescope.
Oh, I love OPT. I order everything I can from them. I've called and said I need a thingamajig to do X, Y, or Z, and their staff has always been able to identify the correct thingamajig for the job.
Thingamajig? You know, you may have a PhD, but you're still a chick. So do you think OPT can help me find the right thingamajigs to see the objects we talked about in this show?
They have all the stuff a slacker could need, from small binoculars to 24-inch telescopes. They carry all the brands and all the accessories.
Cool. www.optcorp.com. Here I come.
And after you order, you're going to edit together the show?
And then I'll think about editing together the show. Slacker Astronomy is proudly sponsored by Oceanside Photo and Telescope. Go ask the experts at www.optcorp.com.